down to the building on the corner and knocked loudly on Whiskey Clipper's plate glass window. Waylay joined her and they both started waving. "What are you two doing?" I asked, hurrying after them.
"Knox owns this place too and does some barbering,"
Liza said with a hint of pride. Wearing his usual uniform of worn jeans, a fitted t-shirt, and ancient motorcycle boots, Knox Morgan was standing behind one of the salon chairs, taking a straight razor to a customer's cheek. He had a leather apron-like organizer hung low on his hips with scissors and other tools tucked in the pouches. I'd never had a barber fetish before. I didn't even know if that was a legitimate fetish. But watching those tattooed forearms, those dexterous hands work, I felt an annoying pulse of desire spark to life under the pizza I'd inhaled. His gaze met mine, and for a second it felt like the glass wasn't there. It felt like I was being dragged into his gravity against my will. It felt like it was just the two of us sharing some kind of secret. I knew what I'd be thinking about and hating myself for when I laid down in bed tonight.
14. The Dinner Party. Knox. "Beer and catch a game? Beer and shoot the shit on the deck?" I asked Jeremiah as he and Waylon followed me up the steps to my cabin. Once every 2 weeks or so, I'd take an early night, and we'd get together outside of work. "I want to find out what's got your beard so droopy. You were fine a couple of days ago, your usual grumpy self. Now you're pouting." "I don't pout. I ponder. In a manly way." Jeremiah snickered behind me. I unlocked the door and, despite my best efforts, glanced in the direction of the cottage. There were cars parked in front of the cottage, music playing. Great. The woman was a socializer. Another reason to stay far the hell away from her. Not that I had to, seeing as how she'd been avoiding me like I was the problem. The past week had been a struggle, an annoying one. Naomi Witt, I'd discovered, was a warm, friendly person. And when she wasn't feeling warm and friendly towards you, you definitely felt the cold. She refused to make eye contact with me. Her smiles and "sure thing, boss" responses were perfunctory. Even when I drove her home and we were alone in the truck, the frostiness didn't thaw a degree. Every time I thought I'd gotten a handle on it, she popped up, either in her backyard or at my grandmother's, in my own bar. Hell, a few days ago, she'd floated up to the window at Whiskey Clipper like a goddamn vision. She was driving me fucking nuts. "See? That right there," Jer said, pointing a finger in my face. "Pouting. What's going on with you, man?" "Nothing." I noticed my brother's department vehicle parked at the cottage. "Fuck." "There a reason you don't like seeing your brother's car parked at not Tina's?" "Is it the bisexual part of you that wants to talk about fucking feelings all the time?" I asked. "Or is it the, I come from a big Lebanese family that knows everything about everybody part that I can blame?" "Why not both?" he said with a quick grin. A particularly loud burst of laughter caught our attention, as did the scent of grilled meat. Waylon's nose twitched. The white tip of his tail froze in the air. "No," I said sternly. I might as well have said, "Sure, bud, go get yourself a hot dog," because my dog took off like a streak. "Looks like we're joining the party," Jeremiah observed. "Fuck, I'm getting a beer first." A minute later, cold beers in hand, we wandered around the back of the cottage to find half of Knockemout on Naomi's porch. Sloane, the pretty librarian, was there with her niece, Chloe, who was wading knee-deep in the creek with Waylay and my grandmother's dogs. Liza J. was sitting next to Tallulah while Justice manned the grill, and my pain-in-the-ass brother flirted with Naomi. She looked like summer. Considering I'd had two sips of beer, I couldn't blame alcohol on my mental prose. My mouth went dry as my gaze stared at her bare feet, then moved up the long, tan legs to where they disappeared under the flirty, lemon-yellow sundress. "So that's the problem," Jeremiah said smugly. He was looking right at Naomi, and I didn't much care for it. "I don't know what you're talking about," I said. Waylon barreled his way up onto the porch and made a beeline for the grill. "Waylon!" Naomi looked delighted to see my dog. She crouched down to greet him, and even from here, the peak of cleavage was enough to tie my balls in a knot. "Waylon!" I barked. My jerk of a dog was too busy enjoying the affection of a beautiful woman to bother listening to me. "Knox! Jer!" Tallulah called when she spotted us in the yard. "Join us!" Naomi looked up, and I saw the sunshine fade from her face when she spotted me. The ice walls went up. "We don't want to impose," Jeremiah said, cagily eyeing the spread. There were deviled eggs, grilled vegetables, some kind of layered dip thing in a fancy dish, and four kinds of desserts. On the grill, Justice was turning chicken breasts and hot dogs.
"You're welcome to join us," Naomi said through a smile that was more gritted teeth than invitation.
Her message was clear. She didn't want me here at her cozy little dinner party. Well, I didn't want her in my head every time I closed my fucking eyes, so I considered the score equal. "If you insist," Jeremiah said, shooting me a triumphant look. "Nice flowers," I said. There was a blue vase overflowing with wild blooms in the center of the table.
"Nash brought them," Naomi said.
I wanted to smack the smug look of satisfaction right off my brother's face. So he brought a girl flowers, and I could barely get her to say two words to me. He should know better than to challenge me like that. I played dirty. Even when I didn't care about winning, I just wanted Nash to lose. Between eating and shooting the shit with Naomi's eclectic guests, I watched her. She sat between Waylay and Nash, who had all but pushed me out of the way like we were playing musical chairs. The conversation was lively, the mood upbeat. Naomi laughed and talked and listened, all while keeping an eye on everyone's plates and glasses, offering second helpings and top-offs with the expertise of someone who spent their life looking out for others. She was warm, attentive, funny, except to me. So maybe I'd been a bit of a dick. Personally, I didn't think that was enough of an infraction for me to be relegated to Ice Town. I noticed every time Sloane or Chloe mentioned something about school starting, Naomi got pale and sometimes excused herself to go inside. She talked to Jeremiah about hair and whiskey clipper. She talked about coffee and small business with Justice and Tallulah, and had no problem smiling at any stupid thing that came out of my brother's mouth. But no matter how long I watched her, she never once glanced in my direction. I was the invisible dinner guest, and it was rubbing me the wrong way.
"Liza J was telling us stories of you and Nash growing up earlier," Justice said to me.
I could only imagine which stories my grandmother had decided on. Was it the rock fight in the creek or the zip line from the chimney? I asked my brother.
"Both," Nash said, lips quirked.
"It was quite the childhood," I told Justice.
"Did your parents live with you?"
Waylay asked. It was an innocent question coming from a kid who knew what it was like to not live with her parents. I swallowed and looked for an escape.
"We lived with our parents until our mom passed," Nash told her.
"I'm so sorry to hear that."
That came from Naomi, and this time she was looking right fucking at me. I nodded stiffly.
"Naomi, did you pick up Waylay's school laptop yet?"
Sloane asked.
"My sister said Chloe's was a little buggy."
"Yeah, every time I open the internet, it restarts. How am I supposed to watch age-appropriate videos on YouTube with no internet?"
Chloe chimed in.
"Or, I don't know, do schoolwork?"
Sloane teased.
I could probably take a look at it,
Waylay offered. Chloe's brown eyes widened.
You're a STEM girl?
What's that? Waylay asked with suspicion.
Science, technology, engineering, math,
Sloane filled in.
Yeah, nerd stuff,
Chloe added. Sloane elbowed her niece.
Ow! I don't mean nerd like bad. Nerds are good. Nerds are cool. Nerds are the ones who grow up to run companies and make bazillions of dollars,
Chloe said. She looked at Waylay.
Nerds are definitely good.
The tops of Waylay's ears turned pink.
My mom always said nerds were losers,
she said quietly. She shot Naomi a look.
She said girls who liked dresses and doing their hair were, bad.
I had the sudden urge to hunt down Tina and dropkick her ass into the creek for not being the kind of mother her kid needed.
Your mom got a lot of things mixed up, kiddo,
Naomi said, running her hand over Waylay's hair.
She didn't understand that people could be more than one thing or like more than one thing. You can wear dresses and makeup and build rockets. You can dress in suits and play baseball. You can be a millionaire and work in your pajamas. Your mom doesn't like dresses and hair?
Chloe scoffed.
She's missing out. I had 2 wardrobe changes for my birthday last year, and I got a bow and arrow. You be you. Don't let someone who doesn't like fashion tell you anything.
Listen to Chloe, who's about to lose a hot dog off her plate. Get down, Waylon,
Liza said. My dog froze mid-sneak. We can still see you, even if you're not moving, dumbass, I reminded him. Waylay giggled. Pouting, Waylon slunk back under the table. Seconds later, I noticed Waylay tear off a piece of her hot dog and casually tuck it under the checkered cloth. Naomi noticed it too, but didn't tattle on either one of them.
If you brought your laptop along, I could take a look,
Waylay offered.
Well, if you're doing a little post-dinner tech support,
Tallulah said, pulling a huge iPad out of her work bag.
I just got this for the shop, and I'm having trouble transferring everything over from the old one.
$10 a job, I said, slapping the table. Everyone's eyes came to me. Waylay's lips quirked. Waylay wit doesn't work for free. You want the best, you gotta pay for it, I told them. Her tiny smile was a smirk now, which morphed into a full-out grin when Tallulah yanked a $10 bill out of her purse and handed it over.
First paying customer, Tallulah said proudly.
Aunt Sloane,
Chloe hissed. Sloane grinned and went for her purse.
Here's $20 for your trouble. Miss Fashion here also dribbled honey on the space bar when she was making tea.
Waylay pocketed the bills and sat down to get to work. This time, Naomi locked eyes with me. She didn't smile, didn't say thank you or get me naked tonight. But there was still something there, something I itched to unlock simmering in those hazel eyes. And then it was gone.
Excuse me, she said, pushing back from the table. I'll be right back.
Nash watched her walk away, that bright yellow material sliding over tanned thighs. I couldn't blame him, but I also couldn't let him have her. When Jeremiah caught his attention with a question about football, I used it as an opportunity to follow Naomi inside. I found her bent over the roll-top desk next to the stairs in the living room. What you doing? She jumped, shoulders hitching, then spun around, holding her hands behind her back. When she saw it was me, she rolled her eyes.
Is there something you need? A slap across the face? An excuse to leave?
I closed the distance between us, slowly. I didn't know why I was doing it. I just knew that watching her smile at my brother made my chest tight, that being frozen out was getting to me, and the closer I moved to her, the warmer I felt. Thought money was tight, I said when she tilted her head to look up at me.
Oh, bite me, Viking.
Just saying, Daisy, your first night on the job, you gave me a sob story of losing your savings and supporting your niece. Now it looks like you're feeding half the county.
It's a potluck, Knox. By the way, you're the only one who didn't bring anything to share. Besides, I wasn't doing it to socialize.
I liked the way she said my name when she was exasperated. Hell, I just liked my name on those lips. All right, then. Why are you hosting half of Knockemout for a potluck?
If I tell you, do you promise to do us both a favor and go away?
Absolutely, I lied. She bit her lip and peered over my shoulder.
Fine. It's because of Chloe.
You're throwing a dinner party for an 11-year-old? She rolled her eyes.
No. That adorable chatterbox is the most popular girl in Waylay's grade. They have the same teacher this year. I was just trying to give them a chance to spend some time together.
You're matchmaking sixth graders? Naomi's jaw jutted out and she crossed her arms over her chest. I didn't mind because it pressed her breasts up higher against the neckline of her dress.
You wouldn't understand what it's like to walk through town and be judged by people just because of who you're related to, she hissed.
I took a step closer to her. You're dead wrong about that.
Okay, fine, whatever. I want Waylay to go to school with actual friends, not just rumors that she's Tina Witt's abandoned daughter.
It was probably a solid play. I'd had my brother and Lucian on the first day of school when we'd moved here. No one in school had the guts to say shit about one of us since we were protected by the pack. Then what's this? I asked, grabbing the notebook she had clutched in one hand.
Knox, stop!
Emergency back to school to do, I read. Pick up laptop. Try to schedule meeting with teacher. Back to school clothes and supplies. Money. I let out a low whistle. A lot of question marks after that one. She lunged for the notebook, but I held it out of her reach and flipped back a page. I found another to-do list and another one. Sure do like lists, I observed. Her handwriting started out nice and neat, but the farther down the list it got, I could practically feel the panic in her penmanship. The woman had a lot on her plate, and not much to do it with if the glimpse of her bank balances scrawled at the bottom of a shopping list were any indicator. This time I allowed her to snatch the notebook back. She threw it on the desk behind her and picked up her wine glass.
Stay out of my business, Knox, she said.
Her cheeks were pink, and there wasn't a hint of frost in those gorgeous hazel eyes now. Every time she took a deep breath, her breasts grazed my chest and drove me just a little more insane. You don't have to do this alone, you know, I said. She clapped her non-wine-holding hand to her forehead in mock excitement.
Of course! I can just ask for handouts from strangers. Why didn't I think of that? That wouldn't make me look like I'm incapable of taking care of a child in the eyes of the law. Problem solved.
There's nothing wrong with accepting a little help now and then.
I don't need help. I need time, she insisted, her shoulders tensing, hand fisting at her side. Sloane mentioned she might have a part-time position opening up at the library after school starts. I can save up and get a car. I can make this work. I just need time.
You want extra shifts at honky-tonk, say the word. I couldn't seem to stop wanting this woman's orbit to overlap with my own. It was a stupid, dangerous game I was playing.
This from the man who called me an uppity, needy pain in the ass and tried to fire me on the spot. Forgive me if I don't ever ask you for anything.
Oh, come on, Naomi. I was pissed off. She looked at me like she wanted to light me on fire.
And?
She said pointedly. And what? I said some shit because I was pissed off. You weren't supposed to hear it. Not my fault you were eavesdropping on a private conversation.
You yelled 2 seconds after I walked out the door. You can't just do that. Words have power. They make people feel things.
So stop feeling things and let's move on, I suggested.
That might be the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life.
Doubt that. You grew up with Tina. The ice in her had thawed and turned to molten lava.
I did grow up with Tina.
I was 9 when I overheard her telling my best friend they should play without me because I was too snobby to have any fun. I was 14 when she kissed the boy she knew I liked and told me I was too needy for him or anyone to ever want me.
Fucking A. This is why I hated talking to people. Sooner or later, you always stuck your finger in a wound. I ran my hand through my hair.
Then along comes Knox Morgan, who doesn't want me around because despite my defective personality of being uppity and needy, you still manage to be attracted to my body.
Look, Daisy, it's nothing personal.
Except it is deeply personal.
Put a lot of thought into being pissed off about this, haven't you? Maybe I wasn't the only one losing sleep.
Go screw yourself, Knox.
The brisk knock at the front door made Naomi jump. Wine sloshed over the rim of her glass.
Am I interrupting?
The woman on the other side of the screen door was a few inches shy of Naomi and wore a rumpled gray suit. Her dark hair was pulled back in a tight bun. Naomi managed as she tried to blot at the wine on her chest with her hands.
I'm Yolanda Suarez with Child Protective Services.
Oh, fuck me. Naomi went rigor mortis stiff next to me. I snatched the box of tissues off the top of the desk and handed it to Naomi. Here, I said. When she just stared at the visitor without moving, I yanked a few tissues out and started to blot up the disaster. It took about 2 dabs into her cleavage before she snapped out of it and slapped my hands away.
Welcome. This isn't my wine, Naomi said, eyes wide.
The visitor's gaze slid to the now empty glass Naomi was holding.
I mean, it is. I don't know why I said that, but I'm not drinking a lot of it. I'm responsible, and I hardly ever yell at men in my living room. Okay. Is Chief Morgan here? He asked me to stop by,
Yolanda asked coolly.
15. Knox goes shopping. Naomi. 2 days later, I was still having many heart attacks every time someone came to the door. Nash had invited Yolanda, Waylay's caseworker, to stop by so he could introduce us. He just had no idea that she'd show up when I was in the middle of unloading a lifetime of baggage on Knox Morgan. The introduction had been brief and awkward. Yolanda handed over a paper copy of the guardianship application, and I could feel her classifying me as a screaming shrew with a taste for too much wine. On the bright side, Waylay had been mercifully polite and didn't mention how I was torturing her with vegetables in her meals. I'd overanalyzed the informal meeting to the point where I was convinced I'd barely survived an interrogation and that Yolanda Suarez hated me. My new mission wasn't just to be judged an acceptable kinship guardian. I was going to be the best kinship guardian Northern Virginia had ever seen. The very next day, I'd borrowed Liza's Buick and marched into Knockemout's consignment shop. Pack rats had coughed up $400 for my custom-made, barely-worn wedding dress. Then I'd grabbed a coffee from Justice and gone straight home to finalize the back-to-school shopping list. "Guess what we're doing today?" I said to Waylay as we had our lunch of sandwiches and carrot sticks on the back porch. The sun was shining, the creek burbling lazily as it flowed past the edge of the grass. "Probably something boring," Waylay predicted as she tossed another carrot stick over her shoulder into the yard. "Back to school shopping." She looked at me with suspicion. "Is that a thing?" "Of course it's a thing. You're a kid. Kids grow. They outgrow old stuff and need new stuff." "You're taking me shopping for clothes?" Waylay said slowly. "And shoes and school supplies. Your teacher hasn't answered my emails yet, so I got a copy of the supply list from Chloe's mom." I was babbling because I was nervous. Waylay and I had yet to connect, and I was willing to attempt to buy her affection. "Do I get to pick the clothes? You're the one wearing them.
I might retain veto power in case you decide to go for a fur coat or velour tracksuits. But yeah, you get to pick. Huh. Okay, she said. She wasn't exactly jumping up and down and throwing her arms around me like she had in my imagination. But there was a twinkle of a smile happening at the corners of her mouth as she ate her turkey and provolone. After lunch, I sent Waylay upstairs to get ready while I reviewed the mall research I'd printed at the library. I was only halfway through the store descriptions when there was a knock at the front door. Fearing it was another drop-by from Yolanda, I took a moment to run my fingers through my hair, check my teeth for lipstick, and close the lid on the roll-top desk so she couldn't judge my obsession with notebooks and planners. Instead of Yolanda, I found the most annoying man in the world standing on the porch in jeans, a gray t-shirt, and aviators. His hair looked a little shorter on top. I guessed when you owned a barbershop, you could get a haircut whenever you wanted. It was annoying how attractive he was, all bearded and tattooed and aloof.
Howdy, neighbor, he said.
Who are you and what have you done with blonde Oscar? I asked.
Let's go, he said, hooking his thumb toward his truck.
What? Where? Why are you here?
Liza J said you needed a ride. I'm your ride.
I shook my head. Oh, no. I'm not doing this with you today.
Not playing games, Daisy. Get your ass in the truck.
As charming as that invitation is, Viking, I'm taking Waylay back to school shopping. You don't strike me as a spend-the-day-shopping-with-the-girls kind of neighbor.
You're not wrong, but maybe I'm a drop-the-girls-off-at-the-mall-and-pick-them-up-when-they're-done kind of neighbor.
No offense, but no, you're not that either.
We can stand here arguing about it for the next hour, or you can get your ass in the truck.
He sounded almost cheerful, and that made me suspicious. Why can't I just borrow Liza's car? That had been the plan. I didn't like when things didn't go according to plan.
Can't now. She needs it.
He leaned around me and called into the house.
Waylay, get a move on. Bus is leaving.
I heard the thunder of feet upstairs as my niece forgot to play it cool. I put a hand to his chest and pushed him back until we were both standing on the porch. Listen, this trip is important. I'm trying to bond with Waylay, and she's never been back to school shopping before. So if you're going to do anything to ruin it, I'd rather take a lift to the mall. In fact, that's what I'm going to do. He looked downright amused.
And how are you going to do that with a piece of shit phone that's too old to download apps?
Damn it. Waylay vaulted into the living room, landing with both feet before rearranging her expression into a look of boredom. Hey, she said to Knox. Knox is going to drive us, I explained with zero enthusiasm. Cool. How much stuff are you planning to buy if you need a whole entire pickup truck? Waylay wondered.
Your aunt said she plans to buy out half the mall. Figured it was best to come prepared, Knox said.
I caught the little half-smile on her face before she led the way down the porch steps and said, Let's get this over with. My suspicions were further heightened when we got in the truck and I found a coffee for me and a smoothie for Waylay. What's your game? I asked Knox when he slid behind the wheel. He ignored me to frown over a text. There was something about the way he hesitated that gave me a bad feeling. Is Liza okay? Did something happen at Honky Tonk?
Relax, Daisy. Everybody and everything is fine.
He fired off a response and started the truck. We headed east and joined the slog of Northern Virginia traffic. I checked my tidy stack of cash again while Knox and Waylay made small talk. I tuned them out and tried to squash the anxiety. Yesterday at the library, I'd logged into my accounts to confirm some budget numbers. Money was tight. The bar shifts and free rent were helping, but my income wasn't enough to impress any judge in any court, especially not if I added a car payment into the mix. I had three options. One, find a day job while Waylay was in school. Two, borrow against my retirement savings. Three, sell my house on Long Island. Inwardly, I cringed.
It had represented so much more to me than just 3 bedrooms and 2 baths. It was a gratifying step that was part of a larger plan. I'd landed a good job at Warner's family's investment firm, fallen for him, and bought a nice house to start a family. If I sold it, I was officially saying goodbye to the dream. Then where would I go after my 6 months of temporary guardianship with Waylay were up? By the time we got to the mall, I was marinating in the misery of regrets and failures. "Thanks for the ride," I said to Knox, who was now on his phone carrying on a conversation that seemed to consist of monosyllabic questions and answers. I hopped out, still clutching my coffee. Waylay climbed out of the back seat and slammed her door. I expected him to accelerate away, leaving us in a cloud of fumes, but instead he got out and shoved his phone in his back pocket. "What are you doing? Are you shopping with us?" Waylay asked. She didn't sound horrified. She sounded excited. "Damn you, Knox Morgan."
"Got some things on my own shopping list. Figured you ladies could show me the ropes."
We entered the air-conditioned mall, and with a cursory glance in my direction, Waylay made a beeline for an accessories store. As soon as she disappeared into the store, I grabbed Knox's tattooed arm. "What are you doing?"
"Shopping."
"You don't shop. You don't go to malls." He rolled back on his heels, looking amused.
"That a fact?"
"You're the kind of guy who wears his clothes until they disintegrate. And then you either start wearing something some female relative got you for Christmas, or you order the same exact thing you wore out online. You do not go to malls. You do not shop with girls." Knox moved into my space. Those eyes, more gray than blue today, went serious.
"You got a problem with me tagging along?"
"Yes. What are you doing here, Knox? I'm trying to bond with Waylay. Everything else I've tried so far hasn't put a crack in those walls. She's got a poker face at age 11 because of the amount of disappointment she's already faced. I want to see her smile. A real smile."
"Jesus, Naomi. I'm not here to fuck that up."
"Then why are you here?" Waylay knocked on her side of the store window and held up 2 pairs of earrings to her unpierced lobes. I gave her a thumbs up and mentally added "Pierce Waylay's ears" to the list.
"I got my reasons, just like I got my reasons for not telling you."
"That's not an acceptable answer." We were almost touching now, and my body was getting confused between the cold air conditioning and the heat pumping off his spectacular body.
"Only answer you're getting for now."
"This is why you're single," I pointed out. "No woman in her right mind would put up with that."
"I'm single because I want to be,"
he countered. I was mid-eye roll when he decided to change the subject.
"So you're trying to buy your way in with Way?"
"Yes, I am. Girls like presents."
"Do you like presents?"
he asked. I shook my head. "No, Knox, I don't. I freaking love presents." It was true. I did. Warner had half-assed his way through the past few years of Christmas and birthdays, making me feel materialistic when I'd shown any disappointment at the thoughtless gifts and the wrong sizes. Knox cracked a half-smile.
"So where's the funding coming from for this spree? I know what you make at Honky Tonk."
I craned my neck to make sure Waylay was still inside. She was trying on a braided headband in pink and purple. It looked freaking adorable, and I itched to go in and drag her to the counter with it. "Not that it's any of your business, but I sold my wedding dress."
"Things that bad?"
he asked.
"Bad?" "You just sold a wedding dress to pay for your niece's back-to-school shit. You don't have a phone, and you don't have a car."
"I have a phone," I said, digging out Liza's old BlackBerry and holding it up in his face.
"The letter E just fell off the keyboard."
Damn it. E was in a lot of words. "I don't need your judgment, okay? Today, the priority is school stuff for Waylay. I'll figure out the rest. So you do your thing, and I'll shower my niece with stuff." That half smile was back, and it was wreaking havoc with my nervous system.
"Deal."
I headed toward the store, then stopped short to admire the window display. A wall of hot, hard chest crashed into me.
Problem?
Knox asked. His beard tickled my ear. I turned around to face him and gritted my teeth. You're not going to leave us alone today, are you?
Nope,
he said, walking me backwards into the store with a hand spread across my stomach. I thought for sure we'd lose him in the first tween store, but he'd stuck through all of them, including the shoes. He'd even voiced a few opinions when Waylay asked for them, and he'd made faces at her to keep her entertained while she got her ears pierced. She was glowing. Her frosty, don't-care demeanor had started to thaw on the second pair of shoes and had melted into a puddle when I insisted she get the sundress with pink and yellow flowers. And that was before Knox had whipped out his credit card when she gasped audibly over a pair of hot pink sneakers with bedazzled flowers.
Why do you keep feeling your forehead, Aunt Naomi? Waylay asked.
I'm trying to see if I have a fever, because I'm definitely hallucinating. The only alternative was I'd accidentally managed to fall into an alternate timeline in which Knox Morgan was a nice guy who liked to shop. We ran into Waylay's friend Nina, with the nice breath and black hair, from school. I was happy to be introduced to her dads, Isaac and Gail, who seemed to accept it when Knox introduced himself only as our ride. Nina asked if Waylay could go to the arcade with them. I gladly said yes and was exchanging phone numbers with Isaac when Knox pulled a $20 bill out of his wallet.
Go wild, Way, he said.
Wow, thanks! Don't buy too much candy, I called after her. We haven't had dinner yet.
She waved over her shoulder, a gesture I assumed meant she had no intention of listening. I turned on Knox.
Why are you still here? You've shadowed us to every store. You keep checking your phone like you're a teenager, and you haven't bought yourself anything. You're very confusing and annoying.
His face remained stony, and he didn't answer.
Fine. I guess I'll just finish my shopping.
Since I was living out of a suitcase, I really did need new underwear. Ducking into Victoria's Secret wasn't exactly a ruse to get rid of him, but I figured there was no way on earth Knox Morgan would follow me inside. I was shuffling through the sale bin when I felt a grumpy, looming presence. He was standing behind me, arms crossed over his chest. I rolled my eyes and decided to ignore him. What I couldn't ignore was the fact that every time a woman entered the store, she stopped in her tracks and stared. I couldn't blame them. He was unfairly gorgeous. Too bad about the whole terrible personality thing. I'd narrowed it down to two pairs of normal old briefs, but kept coming back to sigh over a silky pair with lace cutouts on the side and back when a sales associate appeared.
Can I get a dressing room started for you?
She asked. I thought about it. At least Knox couldn't follow me into the dressing room.
She'll take these,
he said, snatching the briefs out of my hand and pushing them at the saleswoman. My mouth fell open as he dug into the bin and yanked out three more pairs of the impractical, sexy-as-hell ones, pink, purple, and red. Then he grabbed a pair of adorable boxer-style undies with red hearts all over them.
And these.
He shoved them all at the woman, who gave me a sly grin before marching over to the register.
Knox, I'm not buying all those, I hissed at him.
Shut it,
he said, and whipped out his credit card.
If you think for one second that I'm allowing you to buy me underwear.
He cut off my tirade by slinging an arm over my shoulder and covering my mouth with his hand.
Here, he said, sliding his card across the counter.
I was squirming against him until he leaned down.
If this is what it takes to get out of this fucking store without passing out from a goddamn hard-on, I'm buying you the fucking underwear.
By my count, this was the second time he'd mentioned his man parts having a reaction to me. I wasn't a big enough liar to pretend I wasn't happy that he found himself in the same predicament as me, turned on by the physical, turned off by everything else. I stopped squirming when he pulled me in front of him. With my back flush to his front, I could feel the irrefutable evidence of his claim. My body reacted entirely without my brain's input and went into five-alarm arousal. I worried that I was going to need to be carried out of the store.
That was incredibly inappropriate, I said, crossing my arms over my chest as we left the store, his arms still around me.
You wanted me to buy something. I bought something.
Underwear, for me, I screeched.
You look tired, he said smugly.
Tired? I'm exhausted. We've walked 50 miles in a mall. I spent every dime and then some. I'm tired. I'm hungry. Most of all, I'm confused, Knox. You're so mean all the time. And then you show up today and buy me nice underwear?
Maybe you'll think of me when you wear them, he said, his gaze scanning ahead of us.
You're the worst.
You're welcome. We got one more stop, he said, taking my hand.
I was tired. Too tired to fight. Too tired to pay attention to what store he dragged me into.
Mr. Morgan,
a tall, skinny kid with a dark goatee waved at us.
We just finished up, he said.
We were in a cell phone store. I dug my heels in, but Knox merely pulled me forward to the counter.
Good timing, Ben.
Here she is, the kid said, sliding a brand new phone toward me.
It's all set up and in the case. If you need any help downloading your old contacts from the cloud, we'll be happy to help you. Your new number is written inside the box.
Baffled, tired, hungry, a little furious, and a lot confused, I stared down at the phone, then up at Knox.
Thanks,
Knox said to Ben, then handed me the phone. The case had sparkly daisies on it.
You got me a phone?
Let's go, he said. I'm hungry.
I let him pull me out of the store, remembering at the door to give Ben a wave and a thank you. We were halfway to the arcade when my brain started connecting the dots.
You walked me all over this damn mall without complaining, just to wear me out so I'd be too tired to fight you on the phone, didn't you?
Burgers, sushi, or pizza?
He asked.
Burgers. Knox?
He kept on walking.
Knox?
I poked him in the shoulder to get his attention. When he looked down at me, he wasn't smiling, and he didn't look smug.
You needed a phone. I got you one. Don't make this into a thing.
You call me needy. You yell at me for working at your bar and tell me the only part of me worth spending time with is my body. Then you show up on my shopping trip uninvited and buy me underwear and a really expensive phone.
That about sums it up, minus the only part of you worth spending time with.
Are you always this inconsistent? This confusing?
He stopped walking and looked down at me.
No, Naomi. I'm not always this fucking inconsistent. And I blame you. I don't want to be into you. I don't want to spend an entire day wandering around a goddamn mall and fighting traffic for you. I sure as hell don't want to watch you try on underwear. But I also don't want you home alone when there's some guy back in Knockemout looking for you.
Uh-oh. Some guy? Who is it?
Dunno. Justice and Wraith are taking care of it. They'll call Nash in if they need to,
he said grimly.
What do you mean, taking care of it?
I had visions of bodies and tarps and duct tape.
Don't worry about it.
I started laughing and kept right on going. I couldn't help it. I'd spent the last 4 years in a relationship where I took care of everything. Every dinner reservation, every vacation, every load of laundry, every grocery run. Here I was in town for less than 2 weeks, and the grumpy guy, who mostly hated me, had just taken care of me. Maybe someday I'd find a guy who both liked me and was willing to share the burden of taking care. Or maybe I would just end up alone, like Tina had always predicted.
You having some kind of breakdown? Because I sure as hell have better things to do than watch that.
Oh, good, I said, smothering my hysteria. Grumpy Knox is back. What does this guy look like?
According to Justice, he looks like some dude named Henry Golding.
Henry Golding, the hot actor, or Henry Golding, some local biker? It was a very important distinction.
I don't know any Henry Golding biker, but this guy showed up at the cafe asking for you. Justice said he about lost it when he saw your sister's mugshot behind the register.
I was never going to live this down.
You know him?
It was my turn to be evasive. Can we get Waylay and go for those burgers? 16. The infamous Steph. Naomi. On the way home, I programmed Nina's dad's numbers into my shiny new phone. They were not the first numbers in there. Knox had already programmed contacts for Liza, Honky Tonk, Sherry, Waylay's school, and Cafe Rev. There was even one for himself. I didn't know what that said or meant, and frankly, I was too damn tired to worry about it, especially when I had a bigger problem. That bigger problem was sitting on the front steps of the cottage with a glass of wine.
"Stay in the truck," Knox growled.
But I was already halfway out. "It's fine, I know him." Waylay, crammed in the back seat with all our purchases, rolled down her window and stuck her head out. "Who's that?"
"That's Steph," I said.
He put down the wine and opened his arms. I ran into them. Stefan Lau was the world's perfect man. He was smart, funny, thoughtful, outrageously generous, and so pretty it hurt to look directly at him. The only son of a real estate developing father and an app developing mother, he was born with an entrepreneurial spirit and exquisite taste in everything. And somehow, I'd gotten lucky enough to land him as a best friend. He swept me up in his arms and twirled me around.
"I'm still incredibly pissed at you," he said with a grin.
"Thank you for loving me even when you're pissed," I said, wrapping my arms around his neck and breathing in his expensive cologne. Just seeing him, hugging him, made me feel more grounded.
"You gonna introduce me to Blondie and the Beast?"
Steph asked. "Not done hugging yet," I insisted.
"Hurry it up. Beast looks like he wants to shoot me."
"He's more of a Viking than a beast." Steph tilted my head back with his hands and planted a kiss on my forehead.
"It's all gonna be fine. I promise."
Tears stung my eyes. I believed him, and the relief I felt from that was enough to release Niagara Falls of tears.
"Where do you want your shit?"
Knox growled. That was enough to dry up Niagara Falls. I spun around and found him standing only a foot away. "Seriously?"
"Got things to do, Daze. Don't have all night to stand around watching you make out with Henry Golding."
"Henry Golding? Nice," Steph said. "Waylay, come meet my friend," I called. High from her shopping, arcade, and burger experience, Waylay forgot to look annoyed. "Waylay Witt, Knox Morgan, this is Stefan Lau, Steph for short, Way for short, and Leif Erikson when he's being moody." Steph grinned. Knox growled. Waylay admired Steph's shiny smartwatch.
"The pleasure is all mine. You look like your aunt," Steph said to Waylay.
"Really?"
Waylay looked not too horrified by that statement, and I wondered if my shopping bribery had worked its magic. Score.
Knox, on the other hand, looked like he wanted to dismember Steph. "What's your problem?" I mouthed at him. He glared at me as if I was the one to blame for his sudden mood swing.
"Knox," Steph said, holding out a hand. "I can't thank you enough for looking out for my girl here."
Knox grunted and stared at the offered hand for a beat before shaking it. The handshake went on longer than necessary. "Why are their fingers turning white?" Waylay asked me. "It's a man thing," I explained. She looked skeptical.
"Like pooping for 45 minutes?
"Yeah, something like that," I said. The handshake was finally over, and both men were now locked in a staring contest. If I wasn't careful, the penises and rulers would be next.
Knox very graciously took us shopping today, I explained to Steph.
He bought me pink sneakers and he bought Aunt Naomi underwear and a phone.
Thank you for that information, Wei. Why don't you go inside and not talk anymore? I suggested, giving her a shove toward the house.
That depends. Can I have the last ice cream sandwich?
It's yours as long as you stuff it in your mouth instead of talking.
Pleasure doing business with you. See you, Knox.
He was already halfway back to his truck.
Don't leave on my account, Steph called after him.
Knox didn't say anything, but I did hear some sort of growl coming from his general direction.
Hang on a second, I said to Steph. He's got the better part of a mall in his back seat, and I don't want him to drive off with it.
I caught him just as he was opening his door.
Knox, wait.
What? I'm busy. I have shit to do.
Can you give me 1 minute to get Waylay's department store out of your back seat?
He muttered a few colorful expletives and yanked open the back door. I looped as many bags as I could over my wrists before his frustration took over. He marched all the new stuff to the porch and set it in a pile next to Steph.
You did get new underwear, Steph said, sneaking a peek into the Victoria's Secret bag.
Another low growl emanated from the vicinity of Knox's chest, and then he was storming back to his truck. I rolled my eyes and ran after him.
Knox?
Christ, woman,
he said, rounding on me.
Now what?
Nothing, just thank you for everything today. It meant the world to Waylay. And me.
When I turned to leave, his hand shot out and caught my wrist.
Future reference days, my problem is always you.
I don't know why I did what I did next, but I did it. I raised on tiptoe and pressed a kiss to his cheek. He was still standing there when Steph and I walked inside with a dozen shopping bags between us.
With Waylay asleep in a shopping-induced coma, I changed into pajamas and wondered why in the world I'd left my closet doors wide open, then decided it had probably been Waylay.
I was surprised at the effect an additional human had on a household. Toothpaste tubes were squeezed haphazardly in the middle, snacks disappeared, and the TV remote was never where I left it. I closed the closet doors firmly and returned downstairs. The back door was open, and through the screen I saw Steph on the porch. He'd turned my back porch into a citronella candle fantasy land.
You can't tell my parents about any of this yet, I said without preamble as I stepped out onto the porch.
Steph looked up from the tray of fancy meats and cheeses he was organizing on the picnic table.
Why would you even say that? I'm always Team Naomi, he said.
I know you talk to them.
Just because your mom and I have a standing date at the spa every month doesn't mean I'd rat you out, Witty. Besides, I didn't tell them I was coming.
I just haven't figured out how to tell them about Waylay. It took me an hour on the phone after I pulled a runaway bride before Mom agreed to still go on the trip. I know if I were to tell them what was going on, they'd be off the boat and on a plane in a second.
That does sound like something your parents would do,
he agreed, handing me a glass of wine. The man had brought an entire case with him.
Your beast wants to devour you like a dozen hot wings.
I flopped down on the lawn chair next to him.
How is that the first thing you say to me? It's the most pressing.
Not, why did you leave Warner at the altar? Or, what the hell were you thinking answering your sister's call for help? He propped his long legs on the railing.
You know I never liked Warner. I was ecstatic when you pulled the disappearing act. I only wish you would have let me in on it.
I'm sorry, I said lamely.
Stop saying you're sorry.
I'm Our?
You're the one who has to live your life. Don't apologize to other people for the decisions you make for yourself.
My voice of reason, best friend. No judgments, no second guessing, just unconditional love and support.
And the occasional truth bomb.
He was one in a billion.
You're right, as usual. But I still should have let you know I was pulling a runaway bride. You definitely should have. Although, I did get great pleasure seeing Warner's mother break the news to him in front of the entire congregation. Watching them both trying not to freak out to keep their porcelain reputation intact was comedic. Besides, I took one of the groomsmen home.
Which one?
Paul.
Nice. He looked good in his tux, I mused.
He looked better out of it.
Hey-o!
Speaking of hot sex, back to the beast. I choked on my wine.
There's no sex happening with the beast. He called me needy and uppity and a pain in his ass. He's rude. He's constantly yelling at me or complaining about me, telling me I'm not his type, as if I wished I were his type. I scoffed.
Why are you whispering?
Because he lives right there, I said, pointing my glass in the direction of Knox's cabin.
Ooh, grumpy next-door neighbor. That's one of my favorite tropes.
The first time he met me, he called me trash.
That bitch.
Well, technically, he thought I was Tina when he was yelling at me in front of an entire cafe full of strangers.
That vision-impaired bitch.
God, I love you. I sighed.
Back at you, Witty. So, to clarify, you're definitely not sleeping with the hot, grumpy, tattooed neighbor who took you shopping for underwear and a phone?
I am 5,000% definitely not sleeping with Knox. And he only went shopping with us because there were reports of a man in town looking for me.
You're telling me he's a grumpy, overprotective hottie next door, and you're not going to sleep with him? How wasteful.
How about instead of talking about Knox, I'll tell you why I burned rubber out of the church parking lot and ended up homeless in Knockemout.
Don't forget Carlos, he added.
I rolled my eyes. And Carlos.
I'll get the truffles I hid in your bedroom,
Steph volunteered. I really wish you were straight, I said.
If I could be straight for anyone, it would be you, he said,
clinking his glass to mine.
Where did these glasses come from? I asked, frowning at the barware. These are my car wine glasses. I always carry a pair.
Of course you do. Dear Naomi, your father and I are having a wonderful time, even though you haven't been updating us on what's going on in your life. Barcelona was beautiful, but it would have been even more beautiful if we knew our daughter wasn't spiraling into a depression or some sort of midlife crisis. Guilt tripping over. You should have seen our tour guide, Paolo. Hubba hubba, as the kids say. I attached a photo that I took. He's single if you want me to bring you back a souvenir. Love, Mom.
17. Man to Man. Knox. It was too damn early for someone to be banging on my front door. They deserved what they got. I yanked on a pair of gym shorts and stumbled down the stairs, rubbing sleep out of my eyes. Someone better be dead, I muttered, nearly taking a header over Waylon, who put on the speed on the last three steps. What? I said, yanking the door open. The obnoxiously good-looking Steph, stupid, misleading name, peered at me over his expensive sunglasses.
Good morning to you, too, he said.
He wore golf shorts and one of those patterned button-downs that only lean guys who spent hours a week at the gym could pull off. My dog shoved half his body out onto the porch and gazed lovingly up at the intruder.
Who's a good boy? Who's a handsome boy? Steph said, squatting down to pet him.
Waylon basked in the attention. I rubbed a hand over my face. What do you want? Mr. Smooth held up two cups of coffee in a to-go tray.
Coffee talk?
I snatched one out of his hand and stomped away from the door into the kitchen. Waylon trotted after me, anticipating his breakfast. I popped the lid off the coffee and guzzled while I scooped up a helping of kibble. Dog-fed, I shoved my head under the faucet and turned on the cold water, willing the shock to wake up my brain. I came up for air and found a hand towel hovering in front of my face. I took it without a thank you and dried off.
Why are you bringing me coffee at an inhuman hour? To talk about Naomi, of course. I assumed you were quicker than this. I am when my sleep isn't interrupted. So maybe it hadn't been the sleep I was pissed off about. Maybe it was the dream involving Naomi's cherry-painted lips that had just been getting warmed up when this asshole decided to be social. My apologies, I figured this talk couldn't wait, he said, pulling out a stool at the counter. I crumpled up the towel and threw it in the sink. Is this the part where you tell me to back off your girl? Steph laughed. Something funny? You're one of those straights with baggage that complicates everything, he said, leaning on the counter. You have until I finish this coffee before I throw you out. Fine. I appreciate you looking out for Naomi. You hear a stranger is asking questions around town looking for her, and you got her and Waylay out, made sure they were safe. She's not used to someone taking care of her like that. Didn't do it because I want to get in her pants. No, even though you do, because you're not stupid. You did it because you wanted to protect her. So even though you've got this whole Oscar the sexy grouch thing going, you're already miles beyond Warner, in my opinion. I kept my face neutral, not willing to show any interest in this new topic. Warner used her, and I tried to warn her. Hell, I even warned him, but Naomi did what she's always done. Cleaned up everyone else's messes, I said. Steph raised an eyebrow. Well, 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 look who's been paying attention. Waylon let out a hearty burp from the floor. He sat staring at his now empty dish as if expecting it to magically refill. What's your point? She spent her entire life trying to make up for her sister, who sucks, by the way, and it keeps biting her in the ass. Be the perfect student. Get the perfect